All right. Okay, so I'm just going to do a quick introduction, so okay. we'll have that. This is Sarah Milligan with the Kentucky Historical Society. Today's date is February 23rd, 2012, and I'm in the home of Bill Lewis Green. That's what your son told me you go by.
Yeah.
In Henderson, Kentucky. And we're going to talk about Mr. Green's military history as a World War II veteran and a little bit about life in general. So, just to give us a little bit of background, why don't you just tell me a little bit about yourself? Like, where were you born? Who are your parents? All those
I was things. Born in Provo, Kentucky.
In Provo?
Yeah. At Butler County. And my dad and mother were the Jack and Alma Green.
All right.
She was the Pamela and he was a Jack Green. And they run off and got married when he, I think he's about 18, he's 16. So. But anyhow.
Babies. They were babies.
Yeah, I thought they were. Well. I thought they were pretty good size. But it was a long story. I think some friends of theirs would kind of meet them over. And my granddad and grandmother lived down on a farm there in Butler County, down in Provo. And so I guess then my mom and dad had made it up, and this Rob Taylor used to take my dad play baseball all the time, and he drank all the time, but he wouldn't give my dad any, you know. Dad never did drink till way up, you know.
Yeah.
But anyhow, they made it up to meet him over at a certain place, and Edwin West is another friend, and Opaline Nicole was my mother's friend, and they all met over, and they took them down to Tennessee and got married, see.
I wondered where they went.
Yeah. So it was quite exciting. I think my grandma got on a horse and rode all over the country trying to catch them. She had a side saddle, you know, and all that.
So her parents were out to stop them, huh?
Yeah, they tried to, but it was too late. So.
Wow.
But yeah, it was everything worked out okay.
So what did your parents do for a living?
Well, my dad was a farmer to start with, but he worked in coal mine most of the time, off and on, ever. Yeah. He was a real good baseball player. And back at that time that he was, I was young, time was hard, so he didn't have a coal miner's union or anything like that.
Yeah.
And they everybody lived at the company store, see. They bought everything at the company store. We lived in company houses and had company doctors and all that stuff. And so he went over and played baseball for them. They gave him a good job. He never did have to work in the mines. He worked around the mines. He worked
at
the company store for quite a while, you know.
Yeah.
But then after they got playing a while, he would bring friends from Butler County that he knew that was a good baseball player, and they'd hire them, you know, and put them on the other. Had a whole company of Butler County people playing baseball with him. They went all the way on the first one place and another.
I've heard of that happening. What mine was that?
It was Kirkpatrick Coal Mine, Beach Creek, Kentucky.
Beach Creek.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think you're the first person I've talked to that had a relative that did that, but I've heard of people doing that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So your dad worked for the mine but didn't mine.
He worked the company store for quite a while, and then every year, you know, it shut down in the spring or something like that when it got slack, you know, and he'd come home with farm, see. So we'd raise her food and things, kill her hogs and all that stuff. And then when it got time to go back to the mine, he went back to the mine and worked there.
So what year were you born?
1923.
23. Do you have any siblings?
Oh, yeah. More than you'd ever know about. Well, I've got six kids.
You have six kids?
Mm-hmm. Me and her had three. And my first wife and I had three.
So you had three kids for you. How many brothers and sisters did you have?
Oh, I had 10 of us all together.
Oh, wow. That's a lot, too.
Yeah, one of them died at 9 years old.
Okay.
And we had a lot of fun. We played baseball with her dad and everything like that, so that's where we played. The first job I ever got was at the Mines 20th Century Coal Company.
Oh, what were you doing?
Playing baseball and then driving a truck and things like that for them.
How old were you?
That was back in 47, I guess.
So,
47, 48, and 49, and 50 is when I worked at the mines.
Okay. So that would have been after you came back.
After I came back from service, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, let's talk a little bit about that.
Okay.
When did you join the military, and what was the story behind that?
I joined April 1943.
So you were...
I was working in the shipyard at the time. Okay. And I got notice of my draft notice. And they offered me a deferment to stay there as a welder's helper. Mm-hmm. But I told them I didn't want to. I wanted to go to the service. So I came home and stayed for a little while till I got called up to go for my examination, get passed in. So I was sworn in on April the 19th, 1943.
So what shipyard were you working for when you got your draft?
Evansville, Indiana.
Up in Evansville? Yeah. Well, so when you got your draft card, because you were like maybe 19, 20 by that point?
Yeah, I just graduated from high school.
Okay. Were, they offered you a deferment. I mean, I think it's interesting because it seems like a lot of people at that point either joined up really quick because a lot of their friends were, or it was kind of like what you did, or you got your draft card. So how did you feel when you got your draft card?
Were I was happy to get it. Yeah, I had tried to join before, and I was too young.
Oh, okay.
So, but anyhow, when I got my draft card, I had another person in Morgantown that run a dairy farm, and he was friends with my dad and them, and he tried to get me a deferment there if I wanted it, and I told him I didn't want it.
Why did they want to get you a deferment?
Keep me from going to service. I wanted to go, see.
Yeah.
So that's why, like I say, I went ahead and went and signed up. And on April the 26th is when I joined my unit, or the went to...
Did you have to go through basic
training? Yeah.
Where'd you end up going to basic training?
Fort McClellan, Alabama.
Down in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And what branch of the military were you in?
Infantry, heavy weapons.
In the Army?
Army, yes.
Okay. Heavy weapons, what was your job?
Machine gunner.
You were a
number
machine
two
gunner?
Machine gunner. Water cool machine gun.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did they choose for you to do that?
Who?
How did you get your assignment for that?
For the heavy, what, machine gun? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, see, I took my basic training. That's what they assigned me to, see. Company 8 to earn the Fort McClellan, Alabama. Mm-hmm. And so we taking all kinds of training for machine gun mortars and bazookas and rifles and everything like that. So we had basic training in there.
Did they ask you what you wanted to do?
No, they didn't. We literally had a basic training outfit, you know, and they put us in a company, you see. And so I happened to be in that, and I qualified in all my weapons and things like that, mm-hmm. So I didn't have any trouble.
No problem.
And
so where'd you go from Alabama?
I went from Fort Meade, Maryland.
To Maryland? Mm-hmm. What'd you do in Maryland?
Well, it's way there to be sent overseas.
Yeah, so it's just a holding?
They actually, as soon as we got our basic training, they sent us out to Fort Meade, and we stayed there for a couple of weeks, and then they went to deportation there at, it was in Virginia. What was the name of that place?
Outside of Virginia?
Are you talking about Newport News?
Newport News, Virginia, yeah. That's what it was, New Virginia.
Yeah.
And we left there on the 4th of
It's okay if you don't remember all the dates.
Yeah, pretty well remember.
You don't have to.
Kind of slow sometimes about thinking this stuff.
With the dates, we can look a lot of that stuff up. It's more important what you
remember. Yeah, well, it tells you probably about that on here, too.
Yeah, and I
went to Casablanca, North Africa.
They sent you to North Africa?
Yeah.
So what did you do there?
I went there. We'd already taken to North Africa.
Uh-huh.
And things like that. And then we stopped in Casablanca and visited around there. Well, one of our boys had a disease that had us quarantined for about 2 weeks. And we got to go into Casablanca and walk around. And the French had resisted to see they were on the Nazi side.
Mm-hmm.
And they had ships in there and they were resisting American. They sunk all our ships and things, we did. And you could still smell the stench from the ship. The guys were still on there, see?
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
And then we went from there to Oran, North Africa. That were on our Armistice Day. We marched in the street in Oran.
Yeah.
And it would rain and things like it wasn't a very good march. We had free American. Different ones in there, you know, and they're different. Each one of them had their different type of music and thing. It's kind of a hard march, you know. But we enjoyed it.
Well, let me ask you, what was it like going from Kentucky, you know, small Kentucky, to Casablanca? I mean, that seems like it's a big difference.
It all the different in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just thankful to be over there rather than to have him over here.
Mm.
You see so much kids and things that impoverished and things like that, like North Africa and Italy and things like that, that you were thankful that he was there and they wasn't over here.
So you saw a lot of poverty while you were there? Is that
sure
a bit,
did.
Yeah. So from Casablanca, you went and you went to another place in North Africa.
Yeah.
And then you all...
I went from Oran to Bizerte and Matur.
Wow.
And then Algiers. That's where I shipped out to Naples, Italy.
So they took you all around. What was the function of taking you around to all these places like Oran? I mean, we'd already captured them.
Yeah, but see, that was just... We went through Africa, you know, South Africa and Rommel and all over in there. And so the replacements come in, and they had to replace the other troops. And I was the replacement, so he'd come over to replace somebody else that had been killed. So we wound up going to my outfit was the first outfit that took Italy, Naples, Italy.
Oh.
36th Infantry Division was the one out there. And they made the first invasion of Europe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't with them when they did, but anyhow, it was my job to come on later on and replace somebody else that had been killed.
I see. So at what point did you get assigned to the 36th Infantry? Was that still back in the States, or was that when
That was after we were there.
Okay, after you were over there.
Yeah, see, they moved it up. My infantry outfit was on a mountain up there when I got over there.
Mm-hmm.
And before I joined them, and they were up there and for quite a few days, and they had a lot of casualties and things, and they asked for volunteers to carry supplies up the mountain to the troops, and we'd load them on a mule and things and what we could carry on our back,
mm-hmm.
and we'd climb and went up there for 8 days and nights, up and down that mountain carrying supplies up there. We'd go up so far on the mountain with the mule, and then we'd unload the mule and put it on our back and go up so far. And then we had to catch a rope and pull ourselves on up to the top of the mountain to give the supply to them.
Wow.
And
so that was when you were in Italy?
Huh?
That was when you were in Italy?
That was in Italy, yeah.
Yeah.
That was when I joined the 36th. And then after that, well, come back and got sent to up to my unit, which was in 36th Division. They were just coming back from Christmas, you know. Mm-hmm. And they'd been up for 30 or 40 days on that mountain and thing like that. So we had a supply of replacements coming in, me and a lot of others coming in, because our company was pretty well wiped out at different times. So that's why we had so many weeks of training and send you over to replace somebody else, see? So, what was that?
Did you get assigned to 36? Did you know people in your unit?
No, I didn't know anybody at all.
Just, it was you?
Didn't know anybody in the unit at all. Ma'am, you know. And we stayed there for a few days. Well, had a big snowstorm and knocked our tents down. We burnt two or three of them down, trying to keep heat. They'd put a gas in a bucket, set it on fire to get heat, and sometimes we burnt some of the tent there.
On accident?
Yeah, accidentally. You know, you put gas in a bucket, and when it runs out of gas, you pour more gas in there, and it's hot, and it explodes. That's what happened. See, some of us trying to fill the cans up, and they were still hot, and they just exploded, burnt the tent down.
So did you run out of things to keep you warm? Was there not any?
No, we had combat clothing thing like that.
That doesn't sound very warm.
No. Oh, it all kind of clothes. And that uniform thing used to have asbestos in them, you know, back years ago. And we had a regular uniform, then we had the combat uniform and so forth and so on. Mm-hmm. And you had your boots and everything on, so you could keep fairly decent. I mean, it done a lot of rain there and it and so forth and so on. But we survived.
What about supplies? Were you all pretty good in supplies, like food?
Well, whenever we went to start to go out on our, after I joined my company, we started to go to combat.
Yeah.
They had been in for Christmas and they had a banquet for them and everything like that. And after that, we took a 3 or 4 days training, and they decided we had to go out, and they wanted us to cross the river at Rapido and below the Angio Beach Head.
Yeah.
Our casino was a main town around there, and the river run down from casino down through there. And so we was overlooking casino up there and everything like that. We had to go across the mountain over and get up there so far, so where we could set up and look over the river. So we set up there for a few days, dug our foxhole and thing. And we were getting shells about every night because they knew we was coming.
How long had you been there by this point? How long had you been with the 36th Infantry? Like a couple of days or a couple of weeks?
About, unless they got there in December, probably a couple of weeks or something like that. Because from the time we left to do the invasion, mm-hmm. we had 12 days. We went left on the 8th to the 20th, I think, of December, I guess.
Okay.
And we were up there overlooking the river and things like that, and we'd set up our machine gun, dug our foxhole and things like that. And we had to wait there till to see what they're going to do about the river crossing and so forth and so on. We'd get in sail pretty regular.
So the Germans were across the river?
Yeah, they crossed the river up on a big hill. They had their artillery and everything overlooking the river there, and where we had to cross the river. And of course, we didn't realize what it was like. Yeah. We got a lot of troops wiped out before they got across the river. But anyhow, I was standing up one night. We had, night before, I guess we had sailed to give overhead fire to our troops over on the ground that was trying to go. And we fired 18,000 rounds of ammunition with traverse and search. You know what they call it, traverse and search.
Is it where you're sweeping back and forth?
Sweeping back and forth to make the German back up or something like that. But anyhow, I stand up this night and all at once a shell broke real close to me. And I felt a hand, like a gentle hand, push me back in my hole.
On your chest.
And I'll always think it was the hand of God, because my ammunition and stuff was on the side of my foxhole, and all of it was tore up, everything was all shot up. But I didn't get a scratch.
Oh, wow.
And to me, this and that
what is
kept
that?
Me going. That's my little Bible I had. I carried that in my pocket everywhere I went. And if I got little upset or lonely or anything, I'd just open it up wherever it fell open and I'd just start reading.
Was this issued to you by the military?
Yeah, President Roosevelt. It was a, yeah, I think it got his signature on it somewhere. Mm-hmm. But.
Well, that was, wow. So you looked around and no one was there, but you felt someone push you down.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. And I can still feel it. Always believe it was the hand of God or a guardian angel or somebody. I don't know who it was, but.
Yeah.
Anyhow, the hand was real gentle. It touched me right in here and just pushed me down in my hole. And I didn't get a scrape of any kind. But all my ammunition and stuff, I had to redo it because it was blowed up.
Wow.
I had my gas mask and everything laying there.
So were you up there by yourself, or were you with
No, me and the sergeant and our machine gun carrier, the one that carried our ammunition and thing, water boys and so forth, and we'd all up there dug in on that hill, see? And
so were they trying to cross the river by this point? They were starting to try and cross?
They started
Rapido?
They started the night before, on a couple of nights before we went across the river. They started it, and they got wiped out. A lot of them drowned trying to cross the river real swift, and they had little boats and things, and all that heavy equipment they were carrying. The boat would turn over, and they drowned it in the river. Mm-hmm. And then the Germans blow the bridges out, and they had a time getting a bridge back. And then time they got the bridge back over, they come up, the people that had gone before us come back up the hill and told them they were going to take over our place and we had to go over that next day. So we geared up and got ready to go over there. And as we were going down to the river, we'd meet these troops coming back and they'd begging us not to go. Said, it's suicide. You'll get killed. Don't go over there. Please don't go over there. Well, we got a job to do because we had orders to go.
Yeah.
So we went over.
What did you think about that? I mean, when you had orders to cross the river and everybody's telling you not to go and you're up there watching what's happening.
Well, our officers were the one that orders to go. General Mark Clark and Eisenhower and them were had orders to cross that river.
Did you think they were right?
Not hardly any of the I didn't know what the situation was. But not hardly any of the officers in the division or anything agreed that they should do that because they had been warned. It never been happened that anybody ever crossed there before. When they were trying to go and take Rome, see. And they'd trying to go around the casino. And up on the mountaintop is a big Catholic church up there. And the Germans were using that as a sightseeing place and a foreign weapon thing from that church up there. And our outfit had tried to take them several different times before they get there. They'd knock our tanks out and they wasn't able to go. So this time we decided to make the river crossing, but we got orders to do it. But in the meantime, Angio Beachhead was coming up. That was 2 days after we made the river crossing. So we found out later that our crossing was probably to draw attention off of Angio Beachhead because Angio Beachhead was pinned down there for about a month or more.
So what they had you all doing was a distraction for another...
Yeah, it was to draw the attention, to keep the Germans come to Andio, and they liked to drove the Andio beachhead back into the ocean. Because I had a barber friend here that was in the Andio beachhead, and me and him used to talk quite a bit. And they got pinned out on the beaches and things like that, and parts of my old outfit that had come back and other units that had been wiped out over crossing the Rapido come back over there above the Andio and helped them relieve them. But I wasn't in on that because I'd already been taken prisoner, see. But
well, I stopped you from talking about that. So you know, at what point you had orders to go forward and you ran into the guys saying, no, don't do that.
Yes, yeah, but like I say, they didn't have no authority. I mean, they just looking out and they figuring we're going to get killed. They just said, you can't live over there because we were going right into a minefield. We didn't know that until we got over it. They were a level field about 5 or 10 acres of level ground. Mm-hmm. And they had it all mined one way or the other. And whenever we finally got a chance to go over, we'd got the bridge back over and we walked across the bridge real easy, no problem. Got over there, blew the bridge out. And we had nobody to come over and help us or anything.
So they blew the bridge out after you crossed it?
After we crossed it. And then we got pinned down in a minefield there after we were supposed to go 1,000 yards and dig in. We went about 500 yards and all hell broke loose. Artillery and machine gun fire, crossfire all the way. It seemed like it's about knee high. If you lay down on your belly and eat dirt, it would go over your head. And we were told to dig in there, and we did dig in.
At 500 feet in?
Yeah. And then when we got up and got dug in, my sergeant went over there and dug him a hole and getting ready to set up a machine gun. I took the tripod over there. We set up the machine gun. And he said, you know what? We don't have any ammunition. Called all of our ammunition carriers and dumped the ammunition out there, and we knew where it was at. Didn't know where it was at. We didn't have a round of ammunition for our machine gun. He said, I don't have any authority to order you, but we're out of ammunition. I said, you don't have to order me. I said, you're more important to this unit than I am. I'll go get it myself. So I called out there and got the ammunition, brought it back, and we set up the machine gun.
Did you have any problem finding it?
No, I could see this one box out there. It had 500 or 600 rounds of ammunition in it.
Was it out in the minefield or out?
Yeah, we were out in the minefield. But where I had landed and first dug in there, when I got over to my sergeant, where he had in his hole, I looked back to where I would land. There was the mine right by me. I'd laid down right, just happened not to lay on it, see? But it's just, I mean, there's a higher power that protected me than just me.
Several times.
I mean, I never felt like, I could say, when I went over, I never felt like I was going to die. I didn't think he had a bullet for me. But I wasn't brave. I was scared at different times and thought there was no way out. But I made it, and with God's help.
Mm-hmm. So you went back into the minefield, you got the ammunition, you came back. Do you remember who your sergeant was?
Yeah, Sergeant John G. Thompson.
John G. Thompson.
And we had a lithium-ion guy that was there with it to handle the water. You know, we had to cool the water barrel down so often that he handled that to keep the main machine gun from burning out. And he was Lithuanian. And I got talking to him. He said the reason he was in the American Army because the German and them had his country and he wanted to go over and relieve his country.
Yeah.
So, but that about, there are not too many that I knew in the company because, like I say, we just had a short time to be together and so forth and so on.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because it seems like as soon as you got assigned to them, you were you're on the line to this invasion.
Yeah.
Just really quickly. So you got over there, you dug in, you got the ammunition for your gun.
Yeah.
And then what happened? Did you even get to defend a little bit?
Yeah, we did. We got, well, we were ordered to dig in, and then they knocked out our communication to the, and our officers that we had with the head of our officer, our company, I don't know what happened to them, but they said that they went back across the river and left us over. But the Sergeant Taylor was then left in charge of the company. He's the highest non-commissioned officer in the company. And he my sergeant said, "What are we going to do, Bill? We either go forward or go back. We get out of this hole and try to find our way back." So I said, we started to get out of our hole, and then Sergeant Taylor called back and said, "No, you haven't got a chance. The Colonel, somebody from our division headquarters, had give orders for us to cease fire. But we had already fired our ammunition thing like that. But my sergeant, it was so cloudy and smoke in there, you couldn't see anything 30 feet from you for it. And we started firing. He said, "I'm afraid I'm hitting some of our own guys." So he quit firing, you know. Mm-hmm. And then we got the order to lay down our arms there. If we tried to fight our way back, it'd make it harder on the other boys that couldn't get back. So that's the way it ended.
So then did you surrender?
Stayed in their hole until they come down there and got us out of the hole. We just told them to lay down our gun and not fight back, so we did. But,
So how many people were you with how many people were you with when they came down to get you?
They claim there were 700 of us taken prisoners.
Wow.
They were several hundred. My outfit had 2,200 in it to start with, but it was scattered all over the field up there. But the 700 in my outfit was left.
I read there was something like 1,600 killed.
Huh?
I said, I read there was something like 1,600 killed.
Oh, yeah, there's a whole mass of them. I think out of 2,200 is what we had, and then 700 of killed or taken captured.
Captured, yeah.
And then after the battle was over, the Germans and the United States declared us ceasefire and let them go out and pick up our dead and wounded and bring them back. And I said they had a 2-hour ceasefire to pick up the dead and wounded. So,
were you all already captured by that
point? Yeah, we were already captured up the hill on that.
So where did they take you? What happened?
They took us northern Italy, and they loaded us on trucks and started across northern Italy. And then a couple of planes come across our planes flew across the road to one side of it, and they see these trucks, they started firing on our trucks and setting them on fire and things like that, and wounded several of our guys. And I fell in the cornfield, laid flat on my belly, and this plane come by, and the bullets just tore up the dirt right by me and did nothing to hit me. But I was afraid to move there at first, because I'd always heard if you got shot, you wouldn't feel nothing. So I thought, boy, I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't get up. I look there. But I finally moved and seen I wasn't hit. And I got up and went up to a farmhouse up there and hid out and got in there with some Italians in there. And they were tired of the fighting too and everything like that. So they brought out me and another buddy got in up there in that house. They brought out a little wine for us to drink. And we had a couple of drinks of wine. And then first thing you know, here a couple of other guys tried to come in up there, and a German followed them in there. So they confiscated the wine and things, took them back prisoners. Mm. So we went from there to...
So when you got captured and the plane came over and were shooting at you,
they didn't know. They took it with a German convoy, I guess.
And didn't realize it was transport.
Didn't realize it was us.
Transport. So did they? When you got out of the truck, did they come in and put you back in the truck, or did you just walk off into the field?
No, oh, they the guards all stayed around. And they gathered us all up and put us back in the truck.
Okay.
And then we went out of there through the Brenner Pass into Austria, and then from Austria into Germany.
Okay, so they took you back to Germany.
Yeah, well, we never had been in Germany, see.
Right.
We were in Italy.
Well, for them, it was back to Germany.
Yeah.
So what, did they take you to a particular area in Germany and station you there, or did they travel you around?
Well, they took us to, first place we went to British Prisoner of War Camp, Stalag 4B. And they had mostly British troops in there. And we didn't have anything to eat hardly until we got up there. And they just had a Christmas party or something up there. Or some kind of celebration. Anyhow, we got up there and didn't have anything to eat. We tried eating acorn and anything we could get out of the garbage and things where the Germans dumped stuff out. Cabbage leaves. I tried eating acorn. That's not very good eating.
What'd you do to try and eat it?
We got up there and got in with where the British was, and they had some plum pudding and things. And I ate a big bowl of plum pudding. It liked to hurt me, boy. I tell you, give me the cramps and everything else.
Because you hadn't had anything to eat for so long?
Hadn't had anything to eat for about 3 days.
So were they just not prepared to transport prisoners of war? Why didn't they feed you?
They wasn't prepared for it.
How did they treat you?
Well, not that bad. I mean, some of them would be rough and they'd kick you around and do whatever they wanted to. But like I say, as long as you behaved yourself. But they load us on these, what you call, going in the, through the Brenner Pass. They load us on these trains to go through there. And what they call the 40 by 8. 40 people and 8 horses are allowed to carry in one of these boxes. Well, the 40 men filled up a boxcar, see, and the only way we could turn over anything, each one of us had to turn at the same time. We were just so crowded up and everything like that.
How long did you stay in there?
About 2 or 3 days until we got into Germany, went through Austria.
That's
when we went to Stalag 2B when we got into Austria. That's Hammerstein, Germany.
Okay.
And that's where we went there.
So you were in Hammerstein, and did they put you in a prisoner of war camp?
The Hammerstein was a prisoner of war camp.
Okay.
But they also sent prisoners out to do the homework for the Germans on the farms and things like that. So I was sent to a farm. Me and 20 other boys were sent to this farm called can't think of it right now.
Oh, it's okay. It was just out in the same area?
It's probably on this.
New sheet.
Hohenwaldheim was the name of the farm. There it is. Hohenwaldheim, Germany, where was that? That's pretty near to Polish border.
Okay. So it was very southern.
And we went out and we...
Oh, Hohenwaldheim. Okay.
We done all the farm work, cut trees and dug up stuff for fuel and raised potatoes for them and put up hay and about everything. You know. We had done it all and we worked with some of the German kids. They had German girls that worked there with us. And though they wasn't the pretty ones, that they wanted to go to the officers, so they left them there to work on the farm. And I worked right with them, see. And we'd put up hay in a loft and thing like that and just mess around.
So whoever was left, how old were the kids working there? Were they your age? Or were they?
They were probably about my age, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So just, were you guarded?
Huh?
Were you guarded? Were they guarded?
Oh, yeah. We everywhere we went, we had a guard. And every year they'd have all the Germans in that area would have a hunting spell. And they used us, the dog, to go on part of the field and drive the animals into them so they could kill them.
Yeah.
So.
Like flush out the animals?
We had to flush them out to them. And like I say, since that happened and everything like that, I had a dream about us being dogged for the Germans driving them in. So we drove, went down to a lake or edge of a lake and thing like that. And the Germans were there with us. And these three geese come up, took off. We watched them till they went out of sight. When they got so far, they turned around and come back toward us. And whenever it got close, it was Jesus and two of his disciples that we could recognize. We all kneeled down and bowed before him. But I've always tried to put that, I've had two or three, my daughters tried to put that in perspective and things like that, but it can never be as beautiful as what I dreamed in my dream.
So you dreamed that while you were there?
No, it was after I come home.
It was after you come home. That's a really beautiful image.
Huh?
It's a beautiful image.
Oh, it was.
Think of.
Jesus and his disciples so beautiful and the clothes and everything. And he had the crown on his head.
So when they had you working, on these farms alongside Germans, how long were you there doing that?
Let's see. I was there about 12 months on that one farm. And then I got asthma, and I had to be sent into the prisoner of war camp, Hammerstein. And I got a little doctor there, and then as soon as I got straightened up a little bit there, they sent me out to another farm, and I stayed on it for 3 or 4 months until we just done what we could there, and like I say, the old guy that was on the farm, that was our guard, he was 54 years old, I think, and he had a son that was in the German army, and he'd been captured by the Americans, and they treated him so good. This old guy couldn't do enough for us, all right. I mean, we could go out, and they had girls right next door. I had a girlfriend over there that go over all we did was go over and she'd show me the papers where the front line was and talk. Oh. And that's all it was. Yeah. But it was sweet. Mm-hmm. Just how somebody talked to you. The guy from New Jersey was going with another girl over at the same place. But the guard would tell us, you boys, when you're going to go over, let me know. And you get back at a certain time. And I can cover up for you. I'll tell him I sent you on an errand or something like that. So he was just nice. We call him Pop.
Did he speak English?
No, he didn't speak English. We all learned to speak enough German to get by. Because they didn't speak English to us. But in order to obey their orders, we had to learn some English. We had a boy from Marvin Leewell from... read in PA with a college graduate, and he spoke German. And we all had him to help us learn how to speak German enough to get by. And I got a hold of him not too awful long ago. But I don't know whether he's still living or dead now, but anyhow, I talked to him. And another boy that was Howard Huntsberger, was from the same place, Reading, PA. And when the Germans were making the push over back in there, everybody was evading that leaving that territory, you know, getting away from the Russians, because none of them wanted to be captured by the Russians. Mm-hmm. They had really treated Russians rough, and the Russians would turn it on when they come back. None of their soldiers wanted to go to the Russian front. They said if they send us to the American front, we'll get over and surrender. They didn't want no part of Russia.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
So then they put us on the road, took us into Lauenburg, Germany. That's where we got a Red Cross parcel thing free. We got Red Cross parcel every month.
You did as a prisoner of war?
As a prisoner of war, and come in from Geneva, Switzerland. And they'd let us have a parcel, you know, have some cigarette or little box about like it, and powdered milk and first one thing and another. And then, like I say, while we were working, the Germans would give a little bit of something, like some milk, or maybe potatoes or something like that. And we had our own cook. He's from South Carolina. And Lehman Gay was his name. And he stayed there and done the cooking and fixed supper for us and things like that while we'd out to working. So what little stuff that they could give him, you know, to help fill out our food and things like that, well, that's where we got it. And then we got on the road then, and when they started evacuating there, and the Germans was all loaded up with their wagon thing, everything they could get on their wagon thing, they'd go on the same route we was, just trying to get out of there.
So was this towards the end of the war?
Huh?
Was this towards the end of the war then?
Yeah, it was before the end of the war, yeah. But yeah.
So they were trying to get out of where?
That part of the country, because the Russians were coming in and where we were at in there. They were about to cut everybody off in that area, see. So everybody in that area was evacuating and trying to get out of the way, and we was too. There's over 1,000 of us in a bunch was trying to evacuate that.
Were the Germans evacuating you, or were you evacuating yourself?
No, they were evacuating us.
Okay. Were they moving you?
They were moving. What they were doing their wagon thing like that. They had their guard and things like that.
Okay. Were they taking you to another POW camp?
They told us when we started out, we were going for, taking us supply for 15 days. We had these Red Cross parcels. Taking us supply for 15 days because we're going to another camp. We took what we thought would last us for 15 days to go to another camp. They found out after 15 days was up, we were out of food, and we were still going. So we marched for 57 days on the road. Well, we're really on the road 64 days. One time we stopped at a airfield. They had us stop at the airfield to stay overnight or something like that. And next day they ordered us to go out to work on the airfield, try to build a runway for them. And took it out at gunpoint and made it work out there. So we come on back. And the next day our American plane come over and bombed the place where we was at there. Knocked out the aircraft, the towers and things, everything around there. So we, first thing I did was fell in a trench, try to get away from the fire. And when I did, so many people fell in on top of me, I didn't think I was going to get out alive. So when I got out of that trench, I never went back to another trench. Then they come back and we laid in that building there, and they were bombing, and we let you at any time, you know, they're going to hit the building and blow us all. I could imagine my arm going up through the air, separated and everything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you have all kind of weird thing.
Well, yeah.
But a man that wasn't afraid of something. There's something wrong. Because I never did feel like I was going to die, but there were times I could, didn't see possibly how I could live. So you know what I mean.
So how did you survive marching for 64 days on 15 days worth of rations?
Okay. We would stop every night at a farm. And the Germans had raised all kinds of potatoes. They had a great big iron pot. They boiled these potatoes in. And when we'd stop on that farm to spend the night, they'd give us one or two potatoes and a piece of hard, what we call soda spread. That's when I started losing my teeth because that bread was so hard and thing like that.
Really? It knocked some of your teeth out?
Yeah. Well, I had a bridge work to start with, start during. And that bread, eating it in prison camp and across there and everything like that, ruined them. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, we got enough food to survive, get up every morning and go with anywhere from 15 miles to 30-some miles a day. And one night, we had to sleep out in the snow. We didn't get to a farm. I think we'd be out for about 35 miles that day. And we didn't make it to a farm, so we had to sleep out on the snow. And
did you have clothes that were warm enough for
It cold of war, like I say. It wasn't extremely cold, but it was cold enough for the snow on the ground. We had a blanket or something. I don't remember what we had anyhow, but we didn't have too warm our clothes or anything, but we wasn't there too long. So mm-hmm. We snuggled up together. But
so they did feed you, just not very well.
They did try to feed us something, because they wanted us to keep going. Because all these people that were following us along in the wagon thing, that their horses were dying from pulling the loads and things like that. They'd pull a horse over and shoot him, and then they'd give horse meat to people. They tried to give us horse meat, and we wouldn't eat it.
No.
But we seen them. The Russians, they brought a bunch of Russians up close to us on that trip. And they would just starve to death, and they just throw these strips of horse meat out on the ground to them Russians. They'd eat it like dogs.
Were they Russian soldiers or Russian?
Yeah, they were Russian soldiers. They'd been captured, see.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked with some Russians on the farm there. We had two or three Russian people on the farm there that was captured.
Well, so you, you're in this building and you're being bombed, and...
Okay, we'll get back to that.
Unless you want to talk about something else.
No. Anyhow, we got a... Yeah, after we were bombed, just a officer, a guy that was working us on the farm out there on that airport thing, trying to build the airport, he told the commander there that he didn't want us out there anymore because we'd done been bombed and everything like that, and he didn't want to take the responsibility for it, so he told him not to bring him out. So we stayed there 3 or 4 days, and it was raining. And the plane didn't come back. Then on Monday morning, it was bright and early. Commander come in and said, "We're leaving here today." We got out about 2 hours from the place where we're at. I never seen any many planes in the air in my life. Our bombers and fighters, pilots, and everything like it. For 2 hours, we laid there, we just watched them go over because we didn't want to be up to where they might think we were troops and things like that. But I never seen anything like it. One wave after another.
Did you have any idea what was going on?
Yeah, we did. Because in the area we were in at this time, there's so many airports around there where they had German fighters and things like that. That's what they were after. They'd knocking all them airports out, and they did. And our officer that took us out was leading us away from there. He left a briefcase, and he sent somebody back to find a briefcase. He said, good thing we wasn't there. Said they wiped everything out that was around there. Said, wouldn't have been of us alive.
So where did you go from there once they were done bombing?
Okay. Let me think a minute. They put us on, we went ahead and marched away from there and we'd stop at another place. And before I got liberated and things like that, we stopped at a little old town not far from the airport, not too far from there. Anyhow, while we're in this town to spend all night, German soldiers and tanks began coming through, and there was young boys riding them. They were scared to death because our airplane wasn't too far back. We chasing them out, see, so they were trying to get away. So then we took them out on the road, and they took us out on the road to march us further. And me and my two buddies, there were thousands of us in the group. We had met. We had been on the farm together, but anyhow, we got back together after we got in this group. So we were marching along there. It's getting pretty dark there, and we seen a dark spot, and we agreed that whenever it come to a real dark spot, we're going to drop out. And that's what happened. We seen a dark spot, and we dropped out in a ditch. And four German soldiers stood up on the road there, right close to us. I don't know whether they knew we was there or not, but they didn't do a thing. We just laid there and let them march on down the road. So we went down the road. And then we got up and we started out down the road to find a place to hide out. We come to a dairy barn and a farm there, had a dairy barn. We worked our way in there and got up in the loft. And we'd go down in the morning and milk the cows and drink our milk because we didn't have nothing to eat. And drinking that whole milk kind of upset us, you know. And we thought we were going to die from that, so we finally did the Polish boy that was working for the farmer that we didn't know, but he come in the barn, you know, to do some work. So we got his attention and told him who he was, and we told him we were going to starve to death, you know, that we were sick and we were going to have to get out of there. So he went and brought us back some potatoes and things to eat. And when he come back, we said, we're going out of here. He said, when you go out, just don't act scared. Just go out and start demanding things and tell them what you want. Said, they're scared to death because the town a mile away, our troops are in, see.
Oh, the American troops were a mile away.
The American troops, one of Patton's units was there. So we come out, and Johnny Rogers and I was good buddies, and always had been. And George Putney and Hal Huntsberger were the other two, the four of us. We walked out there, and a guy come out in the thing, and we started demanding something to eat. He said, I haven't got enough to feed all of you. I can feed two of you. Two of you go to the burger mash. That was the mayor of the town. I said, Johnny, we're going to the Burgermaster. So we went over and Johnny went up and tried to talk to the French colonel in there that they had captured there, you know, that was doing their work and things like that.
A French girl?
Yeah. And so she come out and Johnny began to talk to her, you know, tell her what he wanted. He couldn't make her understand. She got mad. So finally I went up and started talking to her, and And she went and got the burgomaster. He come out there. We went in there and told him, said, now, our troops are right over at the next town. And we didn't bring our guns or anything like that. We just wanted to show you that we're friendly. Didn't want to hurt anybody or anything like that. He set us down there, fed us a good meal and everything. And we walked out and went to the other town over and got with the American troops over there. And we told the American troops where these other thousand was down the road. They went and got them that day and brought them up.
Oh, wow.
And turned them. And then they took us back there after they brought them in, got us all straightened up. They took over a town, or had a town already there. They just emptied all the Germans out and turned the whole town over to us. Mm-hmm. We had a ball.
So what made you all decide to drop out when you did? Because you've been walking for so long.
But like I say, we didn't figure we were going to get out. Because the Germans had already told us before they let us get free, they'd kill us, see. Okay. So we thought that was the only opportunity.
I see.
And it worked out all right. Because the boys that we sent to get liberated, or they said there were German SS officers there, a couple of them there, and the other guards were wanting to give up and things like that. These officers would not give up. So one of the boys told one of these regular soldiers to give him his gun. He gave him a gun, he killed that one SS officer. And the other one jumped on a motorcycle and took off down the road, and one of the tanks came up and pulled him off the motorcycle. So then they brought them all back up with us. And that's about it.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's quite a
That's an adventure. I mean...
Oh, it was.
That's a... So... I don't even know where to start. That's a lot of... that's a lot of things that happened.
I never created any of it other. I never wanted my kids to go there. I never wanted any of my boys to get in the army or go to war. I'd rather turn around and went back and seen them go.
Did they?
No, I didn't have to, but like I say, none of them went to the service.
Well, you know, thinking back on that, with all the people in your life trying to convince you not to go in the service, was there some similar thoughts behind that? Was there similar thoughts between, like, your dad not wanting you to go in the service?
Yeah, he didn't want me to go either.
Had he been in the service?
No, I never had.
No?
But this war had been going on, you know, and then, you know... Japanese hit Pearl Harbor and so forth and so on. And I had a cousin that was over on one of those rocky islands over. And the Japanese attacked it, and he was taken prisoner and died over in the prison camp. And me and him had been real close friends and things like that. So I wanted to get in, too.
I see.
And I never wanted anybody to take my place.
Well, looking back on it, you said that the town that they brought you to was, that they had taken over, was more like a party after they gave you the town.
Oh, that's Winterfeld Term is what it, the name of the town.
What was it?
Winterfeld.
Winterfeld.
Winterfeld. It's called, I think they pronounce it, Winterfeld, if it's something like that. You know, the German different.
Yeah.
They use the V instead of the W. Mm-hmm. But it was Winterfeld Term is where it was.
I see.
And that's where they turned it.
That's
the map.
His brother, Steve, got this, right?
Yeah, Steve, my brother.
I don't know
went over
why
later.
Steve has this map, but one time he was having Bill. They were trying to decide where Bill had marked.
I couldn't figure it all the way out.
And he was trying to figure out.
Oh wow!
Where Stoke they Dean,
marked? Eustadine and Laurinburg, and then
I don't
Quantumundi with it.
That's where he ended up.
This is up by the Baltic Sea. I didn't realize you were that far north.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, when he came up,
Swanamundi
all the way to Laurinburg.
Well, then there, that's where we crossed over in Swanamundi after so far. That was a big lake or something. Or,
mm-hmm.
And there were German warships at that. And we walked and went across on a ferry
boat. Steve was stationed, he was in the Army in the 60s or and he was stationed in Germany, and somehow he got this map.
Mm-hmm. Can I take a picture of this part?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, you were up by Danzig.
Yeah, and that's where the American would make that big picture.
And you went all the way, over all the way, over to the North Sea almost.
Yeah. Do you see Swanamundi in there anywhere?
I think it's far to the left. Is it?
No.
Where did I see it?
There's Svinnemunda.
I think.
That's,
maybe that's what I looked at.
I haven't been able to figure it out for sure.
We didn't know if times had changed or what.
Maybe.
You know, names or
yeah. Well,
roads, whatever.
Even just from the.
I can't stand very long at a time.
That'll at least help kind of show when people are listening to this, they'll have an idea.
Yeah, you can take a picture of that and so forth and so on.
Yeah.
It had to be cold up there.
It had to have been cold up there. It gets cold up there.
Yeah,
I've been up there. It gets cold up there.
Yeah, you better believe it. Where is that at?
Along the Baltic Sea.
Oh, yeah.
You
sure it is.
You were on the north.
Right. Huh. So that's really neat to be able to see that.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
That's his song and service book that he got in 1942. He's kept all this that they gave them, I guess, when they...
Did they give this song and service book to you when you enlisted? Do you remember?
I forgot all about this.
Okay.
I'll quit dragging it out then.
No, it's just fine.
They would probably give to us after we come back.
Oh, you think? Okay.
Probably would.
It was printed in 42.
Well, but that's when I graduated from high school in 42.
So, well, that's when you, well, that's before you went in, so. It's before you went in, so. It's, you know, they could have, let's see if there's
that. They were probably printed in 42, but I don't know when it was given to us.
Yeah.
I remember it, but I don't remember that much about it, but I never used it that much.
So.
Maybe one of my friends that went to Germany brought that back to me, too.
Maybe.
I had a couple of brother-in-laws that went to Germany over.
Oh.
Yeah. And
were they there?
And my brother went over, my brother brought that map back, and the brother-in-law brought stuff back. One of them brought back a bottle of Hitler's whiskey and gave to me. I stayed for a lot of years and I finally drank it.
Wow, good for you. Well, I mean, that's what I wonder too. I mean, looking back, I mean, it's a long story of how,
too long.
Yeah, but you were.
Like staying a little longer than I had to fight or anything like that. I was involved in all that stuff.
Well, but you were part of one of the most, you know, one of the most gruesome kind of assaults. It's especially in the European campaign, but within like 2 weeks of being turned in over to a regiment.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And then you were immediately captured.
Yeah.
That's a...
On January 22nd when we were captured.
Mm-hmm. So how long were you a POW? How long were you...
15 months at the prisoner of war.
Total. That's a long time.
Yeah. But like I say, at times I'm as lonely here as I was in the prisoner, because here I can't get out and do things I want to and go anything. And when I was a prisoner, we was out every day working and things like that, and I had these companions there to play cards with and things like that and talk to. Mm-hmm. And it got to the point where the Germans had told us if they ever come to liberate us, that they would kill us. So we got to the point of thinking we were never going to get home anyhow. And it seemed like this is just a long way. We'd go out in the afternoon, look out over the Baltic to Sweden or somewhere over there, to think that we were going home, hope we were going home. But we never had any expectation hardly of getting home.
So do you think that you kind of gave up hope that you were going to make it home?
No, I hadn't give up hope. But, I mean, it seemed that it was far-fetched that we could. Mm. I mean, I know after they told us they'd kill us before they let us go free, we were out in a swamp one day working, digging up turf to build to fuel their stoves and things like that. We'd dig it up, great big spade-like thing, and let it lay out in the sun and dry, and then they burn it for fuel. And I found a deer antler out there in that thing, so I slipped that thing under my coat and I took it. I had it in my bed all the time just in case they decided to come in there and do away with us. I'm going to put up some kind of a fight. Mm-hmm. But that's about all.
Did you make friends with any of the Germans? I mean, you talked about you had a girlfriend and there was...
Oh, no, just like this one. Like I say, well, this one little girl that I worked with on the first farm, she worked out in the field with it, and we'd put up hay and things like that. Me and her smooched every once in a while.
Yeah.
But like I say, it never got sexual or anything like that. But her name was Ertl Trout.
Ertl
Trout.
Trout.
And a friend of mine was going with a girl named Ertl Trudy.
Trudy.
And he got her pregnant before they left. I wasn't there when he did, but...
Before you all got evacuated, he got her pregnant?
No, after the war, how'd this go about that? Yeah, I know he did get her pregnant, and he said the Germans took him over to the house to see their folks and things like that before he'd put on the trail. See, that was before we got on the trail, before all that marching thing like that. But anyhow...
So he went over to see her parents and acknowledge...
And he thought they were going to kill him or something like that. And they just welcomed him home and things like that. He come home free of hand. I don't know whether he ever got in touch with his kid or not. He lived in Warren, Arkansas.
Interesting.
River D. Stedman.
His last name was Sandman?
Stedman.
Stedman. Yeah. Okay. Wow. Well, you know, I'm sure that's definitely not a lone story, but that's interesting because you're 20, 20, yeah. 21. You're kids.
Well, I had 19 when I went in. Mm-hmm.
19 when you went in, yeah. Yeah. So when did you come home? What was the story with that?
Well, I got back with these people. Patton's Army and things like that. And they give us this town to eat stuff and do whatever we wanted to. And they had their one guy around, like to say, I think he from New Jersey, him and another buddy busted open a big safe and they had thousands and thousands of dollars German marks. And I wound up and somebody gave me one. He gave me a 5,000 mark piece, and I give it to my sister in Orangeboro. And I had a saber that I got there with a beautiful officer saber. It was beautiful, and soft metal and so forth and so. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, they'll never let me get that through to bring home. So I worked it around a pole, bent it up, and thrown it down. So that all I brought back is this, and like I say,
your Bible.
What little I could do. That was, I considered that giving me more comfort than anything, and so that's all we'd be.
That Bible's seen some use.
Yeah.
So that Bible has seen some use.
It had. It was in my pocket everywhere I went. I didn't feel like a bullet would ever go through it. Mm-hmm. And it gave me safety and comfort. I'd open it up when I got upset or anything like that. I just opened it up and read wherever it fell open.
Did you have a favorite scripture you read?
Well, yeah. 23rd Psalm. My mom sent me that. Mm-hmm. And that was my favorite scripture, one of them.
To read. So you had this town to, and then did they bring you straight home? Did they just ship you home after you had some recovery time?
No, what they did, we get off track a little bit. What we did after we enjoyed that night, then they started bringing convoys in to C-47 transport plane to work. Mm-hmm. Come in there in the town right next to Germany. Anyhow, they come in there and they took us out there and loaded us on them transport plane, and they flew us in Le Havre, France, a place called Camp Lucky Strike.
Wow.
And we seen pictures of it here the other night, where the cliff straight up and down, and that's where the boys throw these things up and climb them cliff, and there's Germans on top of it, but they couldn't get close enough to the cliff to shoot down at them. So they throw these hooks and ropes and things climb up trip. But it was at least 300 foot high, because we'd come in on that off the ocean over inland at Le Havre, and coming right off the ocean right over the bluff. And they couldn't, and I could never imagine how any GIs got up there, but they did during the Normandy and so forth and so on.
Climbing up the wall.
And my best buddy was killed in Normandy.
From here in Kentucky?
Huh?
Your buddy from here in Kentucky?
Yeah. Yeah, he and I went to school together and played basketball and everything, dated together and all that stuff.
James Edward?
Huh? James Edward. I've got a grandson named after
him. Did you have a lot of your friends from high school go to World War II, like join the military for it?
Well, I'm sure they did, but like I say, I didn't know any of them. I went, this Aubrey Penley, he went in the same time I would.
Okay.
And two or three other boys that I knew went in the same time. But we got separated once you went overseas. You just got separated.
Yeah.
I never seen him anymore.
I see. So they started trucking you all back. They brought you through France. And then
no, they wouldn't go through France.
No.
We got a chance to go to France. They wanted to go to Paris. Some of them wanted to go to Paris. And I thought about it. I had the opportunity to go, but we wanted to come home. Figured we'd miss the boat home. So I wouldn't go to Paris. So I'd glad to come home.
They just put you on a boat and...
Put us on a boat and send us home.
Did you come straight back to Kentucky?
No, I come back to... in at New York, landed went to New Jersey, Cape Kilmer, New Jersey, and went from there to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, I think, and back, and then I think I come home, and I had 64 days delay in travel or something like that, and then I went to Hot Springs, Arkansas. And I went to Hot Springs out there, and they checked us out, and that's where I got my 10% disability for my asthma. I'd been having asthma real bad before I went back. But anyhow, while I was at Hot Springs, some of these doctors wrote down 10% for my asthma. And then we left there and come to Jeffersonville, Missouri, in Quartermaster Depot. Mm-hmm. And it was ironic, at that Quartermaster Depot, they put us guarding German prisoners. But we didn't have any guns. They took our guns away. We set up on the tower, and if anything, they tried to get away or anything like that, we'd challenge the officer today or anything like that, Well, we're not allowed to shoot them or anything.
You weren't allowed to have guns?
Mm-mm.
Well, did they tell you why?
Huh?
Did they tell you why?
I guess they figured we'd shoot them or something. They didn't know how mad we were, you know. But anyhow, I've taken 3 or 4 Germans out of the camp and went out and cut wood and talked to them. They had escaped. Some of them had escaped from the United States and had been recaptured. And they said they just wanted to know what it was like to be out in the United States. They wasn't trying to get away. They said, we just wanted to know what the world was like. But while we was over there, we was really upset because we getting news that here in the United States, they were giving parties for the German soldiers and our girl and everybody was dancing with German soldiers and all that. They did. They had real party thing for them. And there's a priest down here, Frank Camp Breckenridge, down here in the between here and Union Town. They had an army camp there, and they had prisoners of war there. And you can go down there now, and see the pictures that them Germans have drawn on the wall and things. Beautiful stuff.
Murals.
Murals, yeah.
So,
It upset us to know that we wouldn't get that kind of treatment then. They were getting said good treatment.
Thinking that they may have not had dances for you, but you all still got to date some pretty girls.
No, we didn't date no girl. We just go over and visit at their house.
That's different. So, okay, so when you were guarding prisoners of war, how'd you feel about that? I mean,
I didn't feel no bitterness. Really and truly. After it was over and things like that, the Germans I knew and things like that and been around and things like that, some of them had been mean according to how the war was going. If they were losing and getting hurt, they would turn on us and be mean to us and nasty to us. But if everything was going pretty smooth, they'd be pretty nice to us. And I just looked at it this way. They're just like we are. We're in the army. We're trying to defend our country. They're trying to defend theirs. I never wanted to kill anybody, to tell you the truth. But if you die or beat, or don't die. That's the way it is in war. So, I've never to this day wanted to kill anybody.
Well, how do you think that all shaped you? I mean, that was a big part of your youth, is being tramped around Europe and coming back and having to figure that. That's a good
way to start. I thought you'd go to Europe and Africa and Italy and places like that and see what kind of moral and thing there was and things like that. It makes you wish you're back home. And once you got back home, things have changed so damn much that you were almost sorry.
What had changed?
The women were running around, living in houses and things like that, and going with all of them were stepping out on a hub and this and that. And it seemed like the moral was not like it was when we left here.
Mm.
I guess. I've seen so much over there that I didn't want to see it here in the United States. It seems so much similar here once we come back.
What do you think happened while you were gone?
I don't know. I guess just the war made things different. That's all it was. And probably no different than the people staying. We all love one another and this and that, and we got the greatest country in the world. No doubt about that. And God has smiled on us all.
Yeah.
We had this. I went ahead. We had the, this is a poem he wrote for his mother. And she had it published in the newspaper back at that time in the 40s.
Oh.
And the newspaper things started falling apart. But anyway, this is something Bill sent to his mother.
I'll tell you about that, too.
Do you want to read it?
Yeah. I could tell it over and over.
I would like that.
Now, I wrote this for my mother. My 9-year-old brother died with lockjaw. just before I went over there.
Yeah.
And Mom just cried her eyes out. She'd take my other brother out to the cemetery and thing like that. And that's when we moved from Provo to Morgantown, because Mom was driving us all crazy. And Dad went ahead and sold the house, and they bought a little store up at Morgantown. And I stayed at the house and finished high school at Provo, living in the old house before the other people moved in. Mm-hmm. But while I was over in the prisoner of war camp, I'd wake up a lot of nights, and I could hear her crying. So that's probably the reason I got around to writing the thing. It said, over the great Atlantic ocean to the small green river shore, run to hear the mother patiently waiting for a prisoner of war. She's waiting, hoping, praying for the time to come once more when our dear beloved father stopped his cruel and sinful war. When the ship once more sailing in this world from shore to shore, mother will be thankful for the returning of her boy. Said, I wish that I could just turn back to my boy. To call him mother aches and pain, that'd be her pride and joy.
Yeah. So you wrote that while you were over there?
That's sweet. I did. Yeah, I know all. Woke up while I was prisoner of war. And here my buddy that was killing.
Oh, John Edward.
James Edwards. And I wrote a little poem for my brother that died.
Your 9-year-old brother?
Yeah, 9-year-old. And it goes like, I used to call him Top, white, Cotton Top, that white-haired brother of mine. And there, my heart is a blot for that white-haired brother of mine. If I die and go to heaven, I'm sure to go. He'll be waiting at the gate to say, brother, welcome home.
When did you write that?
Same time I wrote this.
So were you thinking a lot about your family while you were over there?
You know I did. Mm-hmm. And I had a girlfriend there when I was over there, before I went over, and we were engaged. But luckily it didn't work out.
Was that your first wife?
Huh?
Was that your first wife, or was that just a girlfriend?
No, she was just a girlfriend. She was supposed to have been my first wife. Mm-hmm. And after I got back, things changed a little. And people told me stuff that she was supposed to have been doing it. I believed, and I didn't think she would, but maybe she would. But I never did get a hold of her.
You never talked to her again?
No. Still wonder about it.
Yeah?
Because her name was Rebecca, and the kid used to go over there to talk about her, Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm. That was all on my mind. While I was there.
And you never talked to her?
She was in Detroit when I come back, and I got to Fort Knox over here, the captain on the ship that brought us over here, he told us that the war was over with Germany, and he hoped to be able to take us to Japan to fight against the Japanese. I ain't had no life yet. I ain't lived yet. I didn't smoke, I didn't drink or do anything. So then I started turning on a little bit. Went wild for a little while.
Well, I'd say you earned it.
I don't know.
So what'd you do for a living? What was your career you chose to do?
Oh, coal miner, diesel mechanic, automobile mechanic, airplane wing. I gun bay doors for wing during the Korean War. One over here, and I was the repairman for the gun bay doors, because a lot of times they'd fly off in planes, wouldn't take them up and try them out. So I had to take them in and repair them. sometime take me and let me stay all night to repair a gun bay door for them. So I got in some good time there.
Yeah.
So I've done a lot of things. Road construction, I helped build a West Kentucky toll road.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, done dirt work and concrete work both on it. Mm-hmm. And I think we had 5 miles of that between Rockport and Cromwell, somewhere along there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a long life, been a long time since you were 21, 22.
Yeah, it has been. Yeah. 21, won't be too long, I'll be 89.
Oh gosh, I would not have, you told me when you were born, I didn't even connect that. I wouldn't have thought that.
Well, life's been good in a lot of ways. It hadn't all been great.
As life
That's can what be. We go through with when we live life. Mm-hmm. And family is the most important thing there is.
Okay, is there anything that you want to know? Is there anything you want to ask?
I don't think so.
Huh?
We've talked about a lot of this over the years through Steph.
Yeah.
When we tried to keep mementos, and he shared a lot of this with the kids, and we know a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids have gone out and they've gotten books about the Rapido River crossing, and so that they have a better idea. Our son, we named Edward, and then
you never heard
when he had a son, his first son, he named him James Edward to honor his buddy.
Yeah.
That picture is still in there. Kathy tried to paint it, the geese and Jesus.
Yeah.
I think it's fine.
Yeah,
my daughter
said she didn't get it right.
Was a good painter and thing like that. I tried to describe it to her and thing like that. She tried her best to do it. She couldn't adjust it for me.
It's probably hard to paint someone else's dream.
Yeah, it is.
But that was nice of her to try.
Yeah, it was. She was. We got two or three great big pictures here she painted for.
Yeah.
Covered bridges and things like that. She's really good.
Mm. Nice.
This goes to her.
The Bible.
Yeah. Because, I'll tell you a story about that.
Yeah.
We had twin girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and got them, brought them home, and one of them died at 8 weeks old.
Mm-hmm.
And this one here, and I used to go out and sit and look up at the star. And name Karen, stick out which was Karen that died.
Oh,
and cry,
I'm sorry,
you know, on each other's shoulder.
I'm sorry, they got out.
That's pretty good.
This is what she tried. You know, where the geese had flown away, and then...
She'd only got one Jesus there.
Sure.
She don't have the... But that...
I don't know if I hold it still in there.
This is just helpful when we talk about things, so you can... People, you know...
Yeah.
But. I keep thinking about how I can make the geese go up and then go out of sight and come back from my run another direction.
Yeah.
But... Like I say, I ain't that good a painter.
Yeah.
I've done some painting.
And this is
that's
she
pretty good.
Daddy's dream.
Oh, that is nice. That is nice. Wow, that would be hard.
The other thing, I think that his sister Brenda, she married a German.
Oh.
And she met him. He came. Anyway, he was worried when he first heard about Bill.
Yeah.
But they're very dear friends.
Oh,
you know?
He's a great
he was
guy.
Afraid that it would get taken personally or, oh. You know, something like that. But Jürgen and...
Well, you know, Mom liked to have a fit when she was going to Brenda, Germany with him. She was afraid that she'd be mistreated.
Yeah.
I convinced her that he was a good guy.
Yeah.
You had to do it?
Yeah.
So it's very, like I say, it... The family, he's had a lot of honor in Butler County. One year, he was like Veteran of the Year, the DAR. He's very well thought of in Butler County, and they remember his service.
That's great.
Also,
not only just the Army, but
Kentucky
as growing up and a young man.
Did you show you I'm a Kentucky colonel? And she is too.
Good for you all.
Yeah, we will.
Kentucky colonels?
Mm-hmm. Kentucky colonels.
One day I can aspire to become.
Mine doesn't count because I worked for a general contractor that had a big, did a big flood control project in Pineville, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. They actually built a huge levee, and then I guess the town went underwater about 8 feet. So the Corps of Engineers built this huge levee and put the Highway 25 or something on it. Anyway, the superintendent of that job, he ended up, there were three of us in the home office. He got us Kentucky Colonel. I'm like, what for?
He didn't ask that. He was a World War II victim, too.
Was he?
But, yeah, they got built. I think that we got the Kentucky Colonel about the time that they had that flag ceremony, that dedication. And then Bill got something from the state. They got two or three different honors for him at that.
He got two signatures for Kentucky colonels in their different governors. Same one. But
Roxy.
I'm a glutton.
But it was.
For dogs, too. I can't.
You don't mind?
No, I don't. Okay. I have two dogs.
Gigi is a rescue. We just got her a month or two ago. Somebody just bred her. She's 10.
Oh.
And you can tell looking at her. Somebody bred her like crazy.
Like
anyway.
Crazy.
They're going to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to go ahead and stop this.
Okay.